Hello and welcome to the Paleo Baby Podcast. I'm Julie Kelly, and today I'm really excited to be joined by Stephanie Ruper. Stephanie is the author of the best-selling Paleo Women's Health Manifesto book, Sexy by Nature, the Whole Food Solution to Radiant Health, Lifelong Sex Appeal, and Soaring Confidence. She's also the voice behind the Paleo for Women blog, which is a great blog, which I know a lot of you already follow. And she's also the first ever body image and self-love podcast, has the first ever body image and self-love podcast. That's really hard to say for me for some reason. Live, Love, Sorry. And Eat is her podcast. So I'm really happy to have you here, Stephanie. I think a lot of people are going to be excited to hear some of your thoughts. I wanted to jump right in, and you have a great story, and I'd love for you to tell, you know, it maybe in kind of an expedited version. We don't have all the time in the world, and it's 11 p.m. where you are, so I don't want to keep you up too late. But how did you stumble upon this, you know, the paleo community specifically, but how did you kind of realize or come to a point where you realized you kind of needed to step in and take control of your own kind of health journey, if you will?
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. I think I've kind of always been that way. Well, yeah, but I just wasn't educated about it, or as educated. I don't know if I know anything for certain now, but, you know, because I did things the way that they were kind of supposed to be done or rumored or thought to be, you know, like I ate low calorie, I ate vegetarian, I ate no fat, like literally almost no fat, maybe half an avocado a week, you know. But I was doing the things, you know, plenty of heart healthy whole grains. Like I was trying to be healthy. I wasn't making a real concerted effort because things hadn't gone seriously wrong yet, but I was making an effort. And then I managed eating this way and being pretty like starvation-y about it. I managed to lose a lot of weight. And it's so funny because I thought that I was like, oh, I needed to lose so much weight, but I have since gone back to the same size and I feel like totally comfortable and sexy and all that stuff. Yeah. So, but then I was like, oh my God, I don't look like a stick. I'm terribly overweight. So anyway, I lost weight and I developed a polycystic ovarian syndrome and pretty severe acne, and I lost my libido and my mental health sort of tanked a little bit. And my mother recommended paleo to me because it had really worked for her. You know, she had incredible knee pain that it just like dissolved overnight, the paleo diet. It was really remarkable. And I started eating paleo foods, which was cool, but it didn't actually fix anything. And I began to suspect, you know, and I'm not unfamiliar with science. I have a degree in it. And so I started reading the stuff, you know, and not just the WebMD stuff, but like the real deep journal stuff. And I began to suspect that there was a lot more to PCOS than I had been told. Mm-hmm. You know, PCOS is known as a condition for people, women who are overweight and insulin resistant, diabetes, etc. But I was really thin, you know, so clearly my doctor telling me to lose weight was not the answer. I began to suspect that the answer was in fact the opposite, you know, and that I actually needed to gain weight and eat more and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being true. I finally started menstruating again after I gained another 15 pounds or so. All of which is to say that I found paleo back when my mother introduced me to it in 2009 or whatever, which is funny because it's so much longer ago than I don't know. It's so funny. It's 2015 now. It was actually 6 years. Wow. Wow.
Time fly. Yes, I know.
I'm feeling pretty rocked right now. That's when I started eating paleo, but I didn't start like really eating paleo. I didn't start really eating a way that is healthy for me. I didn't start eating a truly nourishing natural diet until I started focusing on what I could do to nourish myself instead of deprive myself. And that was when all the health benefits came.
What was, I mean, cause so 2009, were you following kind of like a really kind of older version of paleo, more of like a really, really low carb or no carb kind of approach?
Yeah, like old, we could talk about old school paleo now, yeah. Like Lauren Cordain,
okay.
You know, early Marxist and old school paleo, which is, it's low carb, you know, it focuses a lot on fasting and protein and exercises. You know, the paleosphere didn't really have hardly any women in it at all back then.
No.
And I was actually the first person to stand up and be like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, can we think for a second about what we're doing and whether women's health is different from men's health? And it turns out that in a lot of ways, in a lot of really important ways, it is.
Yeah. What do you think are the biggest things that, like, the biggest missteps or the biggest oversights in terms of the difference between paleo for women versus paleo for men? Like, what are the things that you can think of that were, like, the biggest glaring things that you've discovered that women need to pay more attention to than men?
Yeah. So it all basically, I mean, so there are like some minutiae that I could remark on in other ways, but most of it falls under the umbrella of like things that are too stressful for the body, right? Like the male body, I don't know, like male bodies can go on like hunting expeditions and et cetera. And female bodies are designed to make babies. Mm-hmm. And if you think way back to when we were living on the savannah, if there were a time of physical stress, like if there were famine, if there was a famine and you got pregnant, you would die faster than anybody else because you have a greater energy demand, right? And if you're under any kind of emotional stress as well, like your body also doesn't want that. And so the female body has a really sensitive way of responding to all different kinds of stress, mostly the ones that have to do with restricting the nutrients and food that you need for your body, right? So at the drop of a hat, you know, literally for some women, it's reproductive capacity can sort of grind to a halt. And in tandem with that comes the thyroid gland, you know, which also just sort of like just leaps down the chasm. Like it's like, peace, I'm out. Yeah. It's just like, oh, it's over. It's just like, bye guys.
Had enough.
See you later. It's like, yeah, it's like, I'll be back when you're ready to be an adult about this.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And
the otherwise thyroid.
Yeah. And so the things that women do, the big missteps are under eating, counting calories, eating low carb, you know, like especially the female body needs carbs. The thyroid gland needs carbs or doesn't work right. You know, fasting, exercising, and especially exercising without eating afterwards, you know, exercising a lot and not refueling. These are the big missteps. And of course, psychological stress is a big player in it too. But more than anything, I mean, these are very concrete things that throw women off all the time. Mm-hmm. Fasting, calorie counting, low carb, excess exercise. Like, I can't tell you how many tens and hundreds of thousands of women have become a part of my community because of it.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that one of the things is, I mean, when I work with women, one of the biggest things is like you said, getting them to eat enough, kind of reprogramming how they think about the amount of food that they're eating and what's appropriate. And it's really difficult to get them to stop counting calories. And I think one of the things that I really like about, you know, everything that you talk about is figuring out how to kind of reconcile body image and, you know, that psychological piece when you're trying to get healthy. Because the other thing that I think a lot of women struggle with that I work with specifically, they're just not healthy yet. You know, they've got a lot of work to do. But for them still, their main goal is weight loss, even though they're unhealthy in a lot of ways. You know, some of them have pathogens or parasites, or, you know, they've got, you know, PCOS, or they have, you know, fertility issues. They have a laundry list of things that they need to work on. But the main thing, the only thing that they can wrap their head around, or they keep obsessing about, is weight loss. So, I mean, how do you approach that? I mean, and how did you do it for yourself? But then how do you approach it with other people? Kind of what are some things that you think make that shift for people into health as opposed to just like weight loss?
That's such a good question. What I do for me and what I do for my clients and for my audience is it varies. Mm-hmm. You know, certain things do the trick for different people.
Right.
These are the perhaps what I would most like to talk about are the things that work for me. Mm-hmm. It's God, there's so many things. Okay. I don't even know where to start. There's so many. Okay. I need to be healthy for my sake. Like the thing that I fear the most, well, not the thing that I fear the most, but one of the things I fear most is losing my mind when I get older. Mm-hmm. Like I really, really don't want Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So like, that's really big. I need to be healthy because I don't want Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing for me. And people need to know that Alzheimer's is like so common these days.
Yeah.
And if you don't nourish your body, right? Like those things are real. I'm youthful now. I have, you know, all the benefits of the, you know, the illusion of immortality, but I also like, I know that that's not true. So I need to be healthy for my sake in the future, you know, and when you eat restrictively, like you lose sight of those things and you don't get all the nutrients you need and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I need to be healthy because there are other things that I now consider more important than my weight. Like, for example, I needed to gain weight in order to clear my skin. Mm-hmm. My skin gets bad when I get underweight because my estrogen levels decrease. I need to have some more weight on me in order to have clear skin, and I need it in order to have a libido. And like, I went several years without having a libido at all. And that also means like I didn't have an interest in romance at all, which was great because I got a lot of stuff done. Yeah. But I was also really missing out on something that I really enjoy. So like getting those things back is really important. I really need to be healthy for the sake of my mother, who I don't want to have to see me be unhealthy in any way. Mm-hmm. Like that's so important to me. I would do anything in the world for my mom. Mm-hmm. And so that's big on the list. You know, think about the people in your life and what they want for you. But the biggest piece of all for me is, okay, wait, no, I'll say one more. I have two more big pieces. One, it's a point of personal pride for me that I don't do things just because other people like want me to. Mm-hmm. And especially when they're negative things, like how terrible is that? You know, like I'm doing this thing that you like really meanfully push on me. Mm-hmm. Like I used to like let that happen and sort of just try to be beautiful, whatever the way other people wanted me to be, and try to really prioritize that. And now it's like, oh my goodness. Like it's so important to me to take a stand for the sake of myself. Mm-hmm. And to not apologize for who I am and for my natural body size. You know, like my body, like we have to bear this in mind. We like have to know this. Like my body was built differently from other women's bodies. And that's just a fact. And women's bodies naturally like are not just different shapes, but some of them like jiggle more than others.
That's true.
You know, like you can be a size 3 and have body fat, or you can be a size 9 and not.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have body fat. Like it is. Like the female body wants it. You look at pictures throughout history.
Yeah.
There have been different idealized body types at different times. And that doesn't mean any of them are better than the others. But what it does mean is that our beauty standards are arbitrary. So like, that's really important. You know, well, natural bodies,
yeah,
natural needs.
Just the beauty standards that I think are arbitrary. I think even just the weight, some of the weight standards are arbitrary. You know, it's like,
oh yeah.
When we look back in history at the size of women and what it takes to be fertile and what is attractive, especially in other cultures. I mean, I've always said this, I've said to my husband all the time, it's like, I have to imagine that this notion, this like BMI notion that is kind of being pushed on women specifically has got to be incorrect on some level.
Yeah. Just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like just a little bit. It's patently unnatural. And so that's a huge piece of it. And I will say one more quick thing, that the absolute most important thing for me in staying the size, because I could lose the weight if I wanted to, you know, but this is what's healthy for me. And the reason I do it is because Gandhi, all right, like be the change,
yeah.
Right? Be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
And it's my responsibility to women, the women around me and the girls coming up in this world. It's my responsibility to like lead the charge, you know, like none of us are going to be able, we have to do it together and we have to, you know, help each other become women who like are powerful and don't waste our time hating ourselves and instead direct our energies towards like wonderful, loving, helpful, great, whatever things, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's huge. I mean, I think that's definitely something I always talk to them about is, you know, because one of the things that we always promote is, you know, mindfulness or meditation or some form of stress reduction. And usually it's some form of mindfulness practice. And I always get the, you know, people wanting to cop out of that time, you know, does yoga count? It's like, okay, well, fine, yoga counts, but I want it to be a practice. I want it to be something that you've set this time aside for yourself, and I want it to be something where you're sitting down and you are connecting with yourself and you're being kind to yourself. And, you know, whether it's, you know, saying kind things to yourself or just doing something kind for yourself, it's never a priority. And unfortunately, you have to kind of force it on people until it becomes a habit.
But, yep.
Oh, man. So I was curious also about your experience. I mean, because you said that you've always kind of been like kind of a take charge of your health kind of person. But I'm always curious whether or not people that have gone through health struggles have, you know, did you struggle with the traditional Western medical route, or did you kind of know that you needed to kind of direct your care yourself from the beginning? Did you struggle with a doctor who didn't think that you could, you know, change anything with your diet, or did you just change your diet yourself?
Well, my doctor's pretty cool. He's just like, yeah, go ahead, do what you want, get whatever tests done you want. That's fine. Mm. But I've never taken anything that anybody said at their word, pretty much ever. So and whenever I have, it's never worked out. Right. Like the one time I took a drug because I tried to fix my problems, like it literally almost killed me. And I mean like literally in the way that we used to use it, not in the way we use it today. Like it literally almost killed me. Right? You have to say it twice now because saying it just once means figuratively. I literally almost died. Oh, right. And so, and it stole several years of my life that I'm never going to get back. And it's terrible and depressing and I don't like thinking about it. But, so no, the answer is that, you know, maybe when I was like really young and sort of first getting into this stuff, I just didn't know like quite how self-directed I needed to be, but I don't trust anybody else, to be honest with you. Like, give me advice, but I'll verify it.
I mean, I think that's important. It's an important point that we, you know, I remind people of that too, is, you know, nobody is going to do this for you. Nobody's going to care about your health more than you. Nobody is going to, you know, do the work that needs to be done, which I think is an important point because even still, I think a lot of people are looking for a silver bullet when it comes to their health. You know, they've got, like I said before, mm-hmm. they've got this laundry list of things that they need to work on. And the only thing they can think about is, you know, one, like weight loss or looking good naked or, you know, upping their PR in CrossFit or something like that. And I think it's really important to remember that, you know, some things matter, but that it's a bigger job than just, you know, taking a pill or trying this fad diet, or, you know, there isn't one silver bullet. There's a lot of things that go into managing your health. For PCOS specifically, what were some things that surprised, like what are some things that maybe you do currently or you did to get well, or that you work with other women that are kind of above and beyond just the diet piece that became really important for managing PCOS?
Well, I got to admit, I don't think there's much more there other than diet and really? Exercise and yeah. maybe supplements if you want. Well, like, could you... Perhaps, like, what else might
well,
there
I just
be,
mean,
for example?
Like, a lot of times people come to us and they've, you know, they've done paleo and they're, you know, they've realized probably maybe 75% relief of a lot of symptoms that they've had or problems that they've had, but they're still feeling like maybe they've got 15% to go. And, you know, as a functional medicine practice, we run, you know, functional lab testing, and we find, you know, pathogens and parasites and, you know, adrenal dysfunction and some organic acid you know, imbalances and stuff like that. So we create a protocol that has, you know, a holistic approach that has, you know, both stress management and diet and all of those things, but it also a lot of times involves supplements. And so I feel like sometimes people don't get the clear picture that they can just change their diet and immediately get complete relief from everything. Like sometimes there's a few more things involved, like, you know, stress management and or supplements, things of that nature. And I'm right. Just wondering if PCOS is similar in that way.
Absolutely. So I think maybe there's a little bit of nuance between your question and what I was thinking. So mm-hmm. like there's paleo and then there's like eating a diet that's healing for you.
Right.
Like, okay. So for example, a lot of women, every once in a while, a woman will come to me and she'll be like, I'm afraid I'm going to die because I don't do bulletproof coffee. And I listen to this podcast and some guy on this podcast, like implied that if I didn't do bulletproof coffee, I was going to die sooner. Mm. And I'm like, no. Okay. So like that might be a great like step or a great, you know, supplement for certain people.
Yeah.
But like within the world of paleo, there are so many different cures for different things. And that person's cure is definitely not yours.
Right.
Yours is the opposite. You don't eat less, you eat more.
Right.
And so I think with PCOS, it's a lot of like trying to be figure out really specifically, you know, there are so many different things that can cause PCOS and therefore so many different ways to attack it depending on your own personal situation. Mm-hmm. You know, some women need to follow an autoimmune protocol because it turns out they actually have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Mm-hmm. You know, that's beyond normal paleo.
Right.
Some women need to add carbohydrates to their diet because they didn't have any. You know, some women should maybe cut them because they have too many. And it's for your specific need. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of how I approach PCOS is I try to help women figure out, you know, with testing and all that, figure out exactly what kind of imbalance they have. And we can usually, you know, guess based on symptoms and the like. Figure out like what type. I talk about it in terms of types in my book on PCOS. Mm-hmm. You know, what type of PCOS do you have? And then, okay, here are the more specific things you want to consider doing to rectify it. And of course, diet. And of course, stress comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
Sleep comes into play.
Yeah.
stress and sleep. And I do recommend different supplements, you know, because again, there are certain deficiencies you can develop as in any case that food can help with, but supplements as well. So there's all of those things. And, you know, even people, girls on birth control, like all that sort of stuff plays a role.
Yeah, that's huge as well. How do you think, I mean, you said this when you were talking about the things that you, that are really important to you in terms of kind of reconciling with your body as it is, as opposed to what you wish it could be or was or any of those things. You talked about, you know, wanting to be well for your future. And I think that's interesting because one of the things that I'm starting to realize is that there's a couple things going on. There's a lot of women who are coming and they're getting well. But their focus is still very immediate. It's still very acute, right? Like it's on the next marathon they want to run. We work with a lot of athletes. So it's like the next marathon they want to run or the next event that they have coming up or something like that. And, but then I, you know, we have other people that come in, they're having trouble having babies or they're not fertile or, they want to, you know, make sure that they're healthy enough to carry a healthy pregnancy. And I think it's like going to become more common, especially as women wait longer to have kids, that maybe they start putting a little bit more effort and thought into health before they get pregnant and fertility. What are some of the ways, like the things that you see or you recommend to women in terms of fertility? Like what are some of the most important things, both diet and then just kind of lifestyle wise, that maybe women don't often think about? That can affect their fertility.
Yeah, it's a great question. A lot of people sometimes ask me, like, what are the fertility superfoods? I'm like, sorry, I'm not going to tell you that you're going to eat oysters and you're going to get pregnant.
No.
Like, I can't. I can't.
I'm actually a huge, I hate the word superfood. I just can't stand it.
Yeah.
But anyways,
there are so many things that are terrible about our jobs. it's one of them. Okay. So, I don't believe that there are like silver bullet foods for anything.
No.
So there's that. So I won't tell you that. I hate when this happens on podcasts.
Sorry.
What's about to happen? I'm about to perpetrate it. It's not your fault. It's my fault.
Right.
Eat paleo. I hate so much when you're on a paleo podcast and the solution to a question is eat paleo. No. So I really believe that like fertility is all about 100% like nourishing your female body. And like, and what does that mean? It means erring on the side of eating more rather than less, like 100% of the time. Okay. Like, progesterone is crucial to maintain throughout a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And if you're really stressed out, or if you don't eat enough, or if you exercise too much, your progesterone levels will fall. Mm-hmm. And low progesterone is associated with miscarriages. Mm-hmm. So like, don't starve yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, point number one, I know that I may like to sound like a broken record because I say that all the time, but it's just so important for women's health and it needs saying. Mm-hmm. That's really important. You know, nourishing foods. I think it's really important to think about diet, not just in terms of what you take out, which is like really huge in paleo, but also in terms of, maybe even more importantly, in terms of what you add.
Oh, hallelujah. Thank you for saying that.
You know?
Yeah.
You're welcome. I'm definitely not the first. You know, it's kind of, it's something I really love about Sarah Ballantyne's approach and Stacey Toth and, mm-hmm. and Matt, her husband. Like they believe that it's more important to, like, for example, it's more important to add, it might be more important to add kale than it is to subtract bread.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that you should like go on a bread frenzy, but what I'm saying is the food that you add are maybe more important than the foods that you take out.
Well, I think it's just a different approach, and it's an important approach, because a lot of the people that we work with, I'm sure this is the same for you. I mean, you tell them what you want them to change to, and it's just like, oh my gosh, this is so depriving. And so I've completely changed the way I talk about it. I say, okay, I want to add, you know, bone broth. I want to add, you know, as much, you know, fat as I possibly can add. And I want to add, you know, as many amino acids as I can add. And that's all without talking about, you know, the things that we're taking out. And that's kind of where I start the conversation. And then it makes it a lot easier to talk about the things that maybe you should avoid because they have negative effects on your hormones as opposed to positive ones.
Right. Right. So, yeah. Again, you know, and another broken record thing for me, it's like, we're all individuals. So you have to do the thing that's right for you. But in general, like erring on the side of eating more, adding good stuff, you know, vegetables, mm-hmm. berries, fruits, organ meats are so great, like so great and so good for women's health. Mm-hmm. Like eat some liver. I know I don't, again, that's another like paleo thing. Just shout like liver at people, eat liver, you know, but it's true. Like, that's why we say it. Like, it's really good for you. I don't have secrets. You know, I know what is really nourishing for women. And it's like, I really like diets that are pretty balanced, fat, carb, and protein, you know, eat the protein you need, like, you know, a pound of animal protein a day. I know that that sounds like a lot, but you can go up to that much. And it's like, that's pretty good for you. And you know, at least a tablespoon of fat at every meal, mm-hmm. and one serving of like, you know, a carby carb, like a potato or a fruit, you know, of that at every meal. That really like covers your bases. You know, make sure you're getting all your macronutrients. They're important.
Yeah.
Calories, important, you know. It's kind of like you said earlier, like, at this point in your life, if you're trying to become fertile, health is your focus. You know, stop thinking about weight. You know, stop thinking about cosmetic things. You know,
think about your post-baby body.
Don't think about your post-baby body. Like, think about your baby. Step one, think about baby. Step two, think about baby. step three, have baby. Like, it's just, yeah. Sorry, that's just how it is.
Think about your post-baby body.
Yeah, even then don't. You know, like, get lots of omega-3s, but try to avoid the big fish. So eat sardines, mm-hmm. you know, because that'll prevent you from giving your baby mercury, right. you know. I don't know. That's kind of all I got. What do you have?
No, I think that's great. I think those are all, that's all stuff that I would, that's the thing though. It's like, it's sometimes it's frighteningly annoying how simple it is, but how difficult it is
mm-hmm.
to practice for some people. You know, I get it. It's difficult coming from a world where basically everything is the opposite. I mean, can really start to feel like you live in opposite world most of the time, because I mean, the media, everybody around you that's not following the diet or isn't part of the community or has no idea what you're talking about. It's definitely kind of, I feel like, fighting an uphill battle or swimming upstream, which, you know, is tiresome for some people. And I think one of the reason why some people fail to stick with it or have a really difficult time. I get, you know, people all the time talking about, oh, wanting to be paleo while pregnant. I just interviewed Tara Sheffy, who wrote the Everything Paleo Pregnancy book, which is a great book. And we were talking about, you know, morning sickness and all this stuff. And I got a bunch of comments on Twitter about people saying, oh, I wanted to be paleo during pregnancy, but I got morning sickness, and so I gave up.
What?
It's like, wait, no, I had morning sickness and I didn't give up, so you can't give up. Like, yeah. It's simple. There's not a lot to it. It's like eating whole food, eating well. But you mentioned progesterone, and that reminded me that I wanted to talk a little bit about hormones and some of the other, maybe more specific or on the technical side, some of the things that, you know, eating a paleo diet and also kind of managing stress, eating enough. What are some of the, I mean, for PCOS and then just otherwise, just general health for women, whether it be fertility or pregnancy, what are some things that women should kind of be on the lookout for in terms of their hormones and kind of managing them? You know, maybe specific kind of recommendations for levels or whatever, if you've got that off the top of your head, but I feel like not enough women.
Of course,
are,
I do.
I feel like not enough women are familiar with those numbers and familiar with, you know, even if they go to a traditional Western doctor as opposed to an acupuncturist, a chiropractor, a functional medicine practitioner, who maybe looks at lab work a little bit differently. I feel like more women need to be in control of those numbers or in control of understanding their hormones and understanding, you know, how they work for them. Can you give us kind of a hormone?
Yeah, I will. I will not give you specific numbers, and that's mostly because, like, I'm pretty sure I know what they are, but I'm not 100% sure, and I don't want to be wrong.
Yeah.
And also, like, different labs use different metrics, you know, like nanograms or whatever. And so they would, you would have to convert them anyway and be like, what is 100 of these to, you know, 200 of those sort of thing, you know,
with that with how many on a daily basis.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, but I will say that, like, you know, lab standards for like normal ranges are generally pretty good, but don't be fooled by them because, you know, a lot of women, so many women, especially for thyroid, all right, like, listen up, thyroids,
yeah.
Will test in the normal ranges, especially for T3, which is the form of thyroid hormone you, like, need mm-hmm. For your cells to function, will test, like, normal but on the low end, and, like, normal but on the low end is insufficient, mm-hmm. you know? And that doesn't mean necessarily that you need to get on a thyroid supplement, but a lot of, like, normal on the low ends can be insufficient, and normal on the high ends can be a flag, mm-hmm. right? So just, like, keep that in mind, and that'll be, like, the way for you to sort of figure out more specifically what's going on if you're not seeing, like, a lot of, like, big numbers, you know, big scary numbers on your tests, but it can help you be like, oh, okay, well, my body is obviously like a little bit more sensitive. You know, it doesn't fluctuate as much in these ranges as doctors say that they should. So anyway, But I will give you a rundown of all the hormones and, sure. and which ones high and low mean what things, right? So, okay, starting at the top, first up is testosterone. I mentioned this first because it's the one that is pretty definitely most commonly elevated in PCOS and probably in a lot of other women too. Signs of high testosterone include acne, facial hair growth, balding, body hair growth, low libido. These are all things that sort of like, you know, masculinize you, mm-hmm. right? Like the facial hair. High testosterone is associated with PCOS. It can impair fertility, you know, pretty drastically. And its most obvious and prominent cause is insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. It's really simple. But insulin stimulates testosterone production in the ovaries. Like it's plain as day. Mm-hmm. Inflammation can also cause testosterone and other male sex hormone levels to rise. So that's high testosterone. Low testosterone can happen in menopause, you know, along with stress and, you know, stress on top of menopause can sort of do that. The solution, I'll say this now, but the solution for a lot of menopause things, again, is to like really focus on providing your body with the stuff it needs. Like make sure you get fat because your body needs fat to make hormones. You know, you reduce stress a lot because like progesterone plummets at the drop of a stressful hat. So that's sort of testosterone and nourishing your body in a nutshell. After that, I'll say is DHEAS, and this is another male sex hormone, but it's produced by your adrenal glands, mm-hmm. and so it's a stress hormone and a male sex hormone at the same time, which is just like bad news, double whammy, and the worst part about this is that, you know, your body produces hormones in like a cascade, and way up at the top, it's like, do we make sex hormones or do we make stress hormones? Mm-hmm. And if you're stressed out, it chooses stress hormones like DHEAS and neglects the sex hormones, which you need for things like happiness, libido, and babies. So literally. So keeping stress low is really important to keep DHEAS levels low. Really important. Signs of excess DHEAS are very similar to the ones of testosterone. You know, the acne, the male pattern symptoms. Mm-hmm. Next up are two pituitary signaling hormones, LH, which is a luteinizing hormone, and FSH, follicle stimulating hormone. And those sort of fluctuate based on the time of your cycle. And their job is to communicate between the pituitary gland and the ovaries and sort of regulate the menstrual cycle. If you have hypothalamic amenorrhea, that's the fancy name for if you're really stressed out, or you starve yourself in any kind of way, your levels of both of these hormones will go down and you'll stop menstruating. Mm-hmm. Like generally, your levels of like all your
extreme athletes do.
Like, yeah. I mean, generally, your pretty much all your hormone levels will go down if you're stressed out, mm-hmm. although your testosterone and your DHEAS can go up, you know, because of the stress as well. So as was the case for me. Mm-hmm. So those are the signaling ones, and they will go down under stress, and they'll also go out of balance in PCOS. So they're generally in a ratio of like 1 to 2, but that will inverse itself, you know, one to one or one to two, but it will inverse itself, LH to FSH, it will reverse itself in PCOS. So there's that. And then there are the female sex hormones, estrogen and progesterone. Progesterone decreases with stress, and really the only way to increase it again is to de-stress. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but I've read the literature and it's true. And make sure you eat enough fat, but really like and carbs. You got to de-stress to increase progesterone levels, and that's really important, especially in menopause. So ladies, listen. And then estrogen is really complicated. Estrogen levels can go up from being overweight because fat cells produce estrogen. They can go up from like really super consuming processed foods and tofu or flax seeds because those foods kind of act like estrogen a little bit in the body in a particular way. And it can rise as a response to inflammation. Like there's a lot there, and you don't want your estrogen levels to be too high because that can give you cramps, that can cause PMS, that can give you mood disorders, that can, you know, make you really depressed. Mm-hmm. You know, excess estrogen can make you really depressed. So, and gain weight and depress thyroid activity. Like, there's a lot there. So, and those are symptoms also of having excess estrogen. And if that's the case, like liver detox of any kind, mm-hmm. Is really important. You know, eating a lot of greens helps with liver detox, lots mm-hmm. of greens, eating liver itself, bone broth, other superfoods. Right. those things are all really helpful for estrogen, and estrogen can go low. Like I said, as a response to stress and menopause. And finally, there are the thyroid hormones. This can get complicated really fast. there's thyroid stimulating hormone, which is from the pituitary gland, and it tells the thyroid hormone to work. So if your TSH is low, it's because your pituitary gland isn't behaving, and that's probably because you're stressed out. I know I talk about stress a lot, but it's true. And then your thyroid gland makes T4. And then you have this pool of T4 in your blood, and it gets converted to T3 on a need-by-need basis. Your T4 levels will go down if your thyroid gland isn't working, but they will also go up if your body isn't making enough T3 and it's sort of like panicking about it. And so it's like trying to like boost those stores, right? So that can actually be a sign of Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And your body, well, so elevated TSH, the signaling hormone, mm-hmm. that will go up in response to Hashimoto's thyroiditis because your thyroid gland isn't working and your body keeps like trying to tell it to do more, but it's like, it can't, you know? So the TSH is really high. T4, can plummet if the thyroid gland isn't working, and T3 as well. But also that conversion process can be stymied by something as simple as stress or a low carb diet. So you need to make sure you eat your carbohydrates. And you can get a specific test for Hashimoto's done if you test your thyroid peroxidase antibodies. That's a TPO test. Mm-hmm. And that can tell you definitively if Hashimoto's thyroiditis, the autoimmune disease, is the cause of your thyroid symptoms, which include things like cold hands and feet, difficulty losing weight, fatigue, poor sleep, sensitivity to cold. That can tell you definitively if Hashimoto's is involved in your thyroid problem or if it's something different. And if it's something different, it's most likely, I hate to say this again, stress.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a lot of things, I think. I mean, one of the things yes. that we've seen kind of notoriously in doing this work, like working with people and then testing everything, is that the thyroid is often the smoke and not the fire. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not participating because it's had it with the stress. It's had it with the gut infection that you've had for a million years. It's had it with, mm-hmm. you know, your nutrient deficiencies. And so, that's a lot of times, like doing an intake, people are like, oh, aren't you going to ask me about my thyroid symptoms and all my thyroid history? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I care about it, but I would be willing to wager that when we get done dealing with this other list of things, the thyroid can kind of ends up taking care of itself more than likely. Yeah,
definitely. So those are all the things. I know that I said a lot really fast and also nothing at the same time.
it was definitely something.
Okay. I hope it's not unhelpful.
No, I think it's very helpful. I think it's just important to kind of get people to realize that there are some things, some basic kind of physiology, biochemical pathways in their body that they should become familiar with. Because like we've said earlier, nobody's going to do it for you. And I think it's not good enough to just get a panel done and have your doctor say, oh yeah, everything looks normal. See you in 10 years or come back when something breaks. It's, you know, if you want to have optimal health, which is a really, another really annoying saying, if you want to have the best health possible, you need to take better care, more proactive step to managing your health. And I think some of that comes from really kind of getting a little bit more nitty and gritty than some people maybe want to get, and understanding even at a very basic level which hormones you should be concerned about and paying attention to. So thank you for thank you for indulging me in that.
Great.
Well, I have had a lot of fun talking to you. I definitely think that
everyone listening would get a lot out of checking out your books. You've got a lot of ebooks, so that you also have Sexy by Nature, which is wonderful. And I think
awesome. I think yeah.
It's a good one. And you cover a lot of this stuff in much more detail and specifics in all of the books that you have to offer. But you also, I want to recommend your PCOS program and really kind of helping women get through that step by step. If they're struggling, you're a great resource. So we'll have to have you back on, because I feel like we could talk about a million other things.
I'd be so happy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we should definitely do it. Or you can come on our other equally fabulous podcast, the Nourish, Balance, Thrive podcast, and talk to my British husband. You can regale him about your tours in the UK.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to move there, so we'll see.
Awesome. Well, maybe we can give you some tips. What neighborhoods to avoid? He's good at that. Well, thanks again for being on, Stephanie, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Julie. Thank you.